And now a contemporary story of marriage and infidelity. One of this summer's hot new reads is Dean Bacopoulos' new novel, Summer Long. When it opens, Claire and Don Lowry have been married for a long time. They were college sweethearts, and they wound up back in the college town where they met, Grinnell, Iowa. Claire originally wanted to be a writer. Now she's a stay-at-home mom. Don is a real estate agent, and when we meet them, they're deeply in debt. And unbeknownst to Claire, they're also behind on their mortgage, and then everything begins to fall apart.
Summer Long is the story of a married couple that asks the often unasked question, which is, why are we still married? And once one of the wife asks the husband that question, sort of on a whim after a particularly strange night, things unravel. It's one of those questions you can't take back once you ask it.
There's an epigraph to the first part from a Kazuo Ishiguro novel. It reads, "There was another life I might have had, but I'm having this one." So that seems to be the feeling that's haunting these characters, Claire and Don. At the beginning of the book, they keep asking, what life might I have had?
Yeah, I think there's a certain type of middle-aged moment, I think, where you ask that very question. It's especially true of people with some privilege, but it is, I think, true of just about anyone. It's one of the things that makes middle age so difficult, that no matter what you've done, no matter how good things might be, there is this little nagging question that pops up. What were the other possibilities?
Well, the way you treat it, it's a dangerous question for your characters. I mean, it's kind of what sets the whole plot moving. Once somebody asks it, it's like opening Pandora's box, you know, and their lives start to unravel.
Well, I think so. And I think, you know, I think every generation has a sort of malaise or curse that they wrestle with. And for my generation, I'll be 40 this summer, so I was born in 1975. For my generation, I think those of us who sort of went to high school and college during the Clinton years and this booming economy in a time of great national optimism and peace, put that in quotes, but a pretty peaceful time, had a million choices and a lot of easy credit as well to facilitate those choices. And in some ways, it's coming around to my generation to be a little bit of a, maybe curse is too heavy a word, but certainly a stumbling block when they hit middle age. Because there were so many possibilities they had when they were, you know, 20 or 25. That very much is the anxiety of my generation.
We should talk about the setting, because there's something sort of appropriate about setting a story about midlife and mid-marriage in the Midwest. It's kind of like you've got a lot of characters who are just marooned in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, that was part of it. I wanted something about Iowa being so far from either coast can exacerbate panic every so often, I think. Especially Grinnell's like plumb smack in the middle of Iowa, and it's a beautiful place, and it's a beautiful landscape and really wonderful people. But if you're in a time in your life where you're feeling stuck in any way and you wake up at 3 a.m, it just feels like you can't get anywhere. You're there, your thoughts are there, everybody who knows you is there. And no matter how fast you run, you're still going to be in Iowa. So
the other part of the setting is it's summertime, and it's hot, record hot. Well, it also lets you write scenes, many scenes, set at swimming pools. Talk about an iconic American setting. I was actually trying to count up how many swimming pool scenes you have and what different kinds.
Yeah, there's a lot of swimming pools in the book. And one of the things that I find so sort of strange from a novel's perspective, so kind of intoxicating to think about as a writer, is swimming pools are these really wholesome places where everybody goes to cool off and have fun, and kids are running around and teenagers are splashing and grown-ups are, you know, lying in lawn chairs. And then, but it's also incredibly erotic. I mean, people
everybody's
are half naked.
Right.
Everyone's half naked and flirting, and in some instances drinking. And you think, like, this is so close to tipping over into complete chaos if we went with our worst impulses. So I always found swimming pools to be both like this great symbol of wholesome, you know, American Midwestern summer fun, but also to be just, they're sexy places to hang around. And no one ever wants to talk about how strange it is that, you know, you're talking to people you know well, but you're basically wearing things that are skimpier than your underwear half the time, you know?
Well, so as the temperature rises, you know, literally and metaphorically, Claire and Don, your characters, each begin to contemplate infidelity, which is such a classic subject for a novel. And not only, I noticed, not only are your characters thinking about infidelity, they're also reading about it. So you have characters mm-hmm. who are always picking up copies of Anna Karenina or Madame Bovary, you know, these classic mm-hmm. stories of women who destroyed their lives by having affairs. What were you wanting to say?
Well, I think that there's certain questions or thoughts we don't allow ourselves to have in order to maintain some sort of domestic balance or happiness. And it seems to me that there are moments in our lives where we maybe are thinking of something that we shouldn't be thinking of, and then it seems to be everywhere. And so I think sometimes subconsciously we start to get drawn to sort of fictional or cultural references to bad behavior when we're contemplating it but not admitting it. And so it's kind of, you know, a little literary geek joke in there. But it is also true that I think we often seek out in fiction first the things we are considering doing ourselves.
Mm. So I have to ask, your marriage broke up while you were writing this book. Fair to assume that you had some firsthand experience of the kinds of things you put your characters through?
Well, yeah, it didn't start out autobiographical. As life, you know, deals you things you don't expect. I had really started this book out to be a much different book. And then just around the time Claire asked the question in my drafting process of Don Lowry, why are we still married? And it was just kind of coincided maybe as if it was 3 months before my own wife asked that same question in almost an eerily similar way. It got blurted out, and it was a question we really had trouble answering and a question we couldn't take back. And so as the book deepened, as I revised the book and edited the book and added characters to the book, it changed very much with, really the emotional experience I was going through on any given day. I don't think I ever want to write a book in this way again.
It sounds excruciating.
It was sort of horrible, but also sort of probably the thing that kept me sane through the whole mess was that I had a place to go where I could wrestle with these questions.
Were there times when you felt like the story you were telling in the book and what was happening in your real life were just blurring together?
Yeah. There were, there was really some dark nights of the soul where I would be up writing this book and just thinking to myself, if I write this as a happy ending, I'm going to save everything. You know, I'm going to fix everything and all this will go away. Or if I write the character of Claire beautifully enough, or if I make Don, you know, sympathetic enough, a beautiful book is going to fix the mess of my reality. And, you know, obviously that doesn't work.
Well, as I read the book and as Claire and Don's marriage begins to really founder, somewhere around in there, I started thinking about John Cheever and John Updike, both of whom wrote a lot about suburbia, marriage, infidelity, midlife. I did get the feeling sometimes that you were probably making some deliberate references to their work, although I don't know their work well enough to have caught anything. Did you have them on your mind?
Sure. I mean, I think anytime you're a white male writing about marriage, Cheever and Updike are there both as sort of models, but also like laughing at you because you know there's a sort of stereotype that you're going to be playing up against. And so I deliberately was aware of their tradition, but also wanted to sort of work against, you know, maybe what's dated or misogynistic about the way they looked at marriage and infidelity.
There's another section I was going to ask you to read that kind of reflects that. It's a conversation, okay. Claire and Don are having about how they don't want to do what their parents did.
Yeah, this section was definitely one of those moments where life and art were overlapping in a really uncomfortable way. This idea that one day you realize that your parents are right there in the middle of your marriage in a way you never thought would happen. You bring your parents into your marriage. You don't mean to do it, but one day you amble into what Dante calls the dark wood, midway along the journey of your life, and you find them there, waiting to participate in your miseries. This is what Claire believes, and this is why, a week later, she says to Don, "We're not going to do this the way our parents did." "Do what?" Don says. He's washing dishes, having made pancakes and bacon for the third morning in a row, as if the festive breakfast of summer vacation might help his children not notice the serious cliff the family is about to fall over. Claire is opening a carton of packing tape and tape guns and Sharpie markers that she has ordered online. She's switching into moving mode, the challenge of it helping to mute the sadness of it all. "I called your mother and had a talk with her," Claire says. "I told her everything." "Everything?" The kids are out in the backyard with neighbors, running through the sprinkler. It's almost 90 degrees out and not yet 10 a.m. You told her about how you skinny-dipped with the guy you just met? Claire assembles a tape gun. Yep, and I told her how you got high with a college girl and slept next to her all night. Don sets down the dish brush. What? He says. And how every chance I get, I go and see Charlie, and it makes me feel good to talk to him. He calms me down. He gets me. He understands where I'm at, that I'm sick of striving, of staying afloat, and that you get so jealous you leave the house if I have left before you, and you go smoke pot with a girl who likes to smoke pot with a middle-aged realtor for God knows what kind of daddy issues. And I also told your mother that you have gone crazy and you're in love with your own misery more than me. And Claire, Jesus, the kids, Don hisses. Wendy has just walked into the kitchen. What do you want, Wendy? Can we have popsicles now?
That's just so horribly accurate. the way high drama unfolds in real life in the middle of just everyday normality. Popsicles and packing tape and divorce. It's just, I don't know, heartbreaking and also funny.
Yeah, I do think, you know, it can go both ways. I think some of the distractions of domestic life can keep us from overreacting to the things we're simmering, the resentment that might be brewing underneath the surface of a marriage when you have a moment where you're just too busy to think about it, but also moments of tenderness where your kids crack you up or you make a great dinner together and for a moment everything feels very blissful and calm in the house. So I think that there are real joys of parenting together and joys of living together that can really put your perspective back in place and maybe diffuse some of the resentment in a positive way when you realize it's not that big a deal.
Yeah, but I guess the same domestic life that distracted you can also give you enough perspective to kind of get through everything to realize that, you know, you don't have to have the perfect marriage or the perfect life.
Yeah, I do think that that is one of the first signs of maturity is the embrace of imperfection. And I think that is true in relationships, in work, in housing, you know, all these kind of things we're concerned with. I think I'm finally getting to that point in my life where, like, I realize perfection is not even a possibility. I'm a lot kinder to myself. I think I drove myself incredibly hard as a young person, and I missed out on some things, I think, because of that. So, like, I don't know, it might be 20 years before another book. I'm being all gentle with myself now.
We'll just have to enjoy this one while we can. Thanks mm-hmm. so much for talking.
Thank you, Anne.
Dean Bacopoulos is writer-in-residence at Grinnell College in Iowa. His new novel is called Summer Long. That's it for this hour, but you'll find lots more on our podcast feed. Look for it on iTunes or Stitcher.